Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding right your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Last Word on Today FM.
And what we're doing to start the program today is we're doing a personal finance special. We've extended Charlie Weston's personal finance spot. The personal finance editor of the Irish Independent is here with us. And we've asked Sarah McGuinness, political correspondent of the Irish Daily Mail, to join us as well for an extended spot. And I'll get to you in a second, Sarah. But Charlie, what I want to talk about is how the older generation is screwing the younger generation when it comes to money in this country and standards of living. And two things in the last week really sort of brought it home to me. One was when you were with us on the programme last Friday and you were talking about the incredible increase in the amount of debt that has been, borrowings been taken up by people. And I think we can assume reasonably that it's people at a certain age in their 20s, 30s and 40s who are doing it for housing or home improvements or to get a car or whatever, that they're the ones who have to borrow more than older generations like you and me, right?
Yeah.
And the second thing then this week was the quite extraordinary daft.ie report on rent, which suggested the average monthly rent exceeded €2,000 for the first time. And again, I know there are older people who are paying big rents and who are worried about what will happen in their retirement years. But I suspect the majority of people who are paying those rents are younger people. And it did strike me that when we started talking in the office about the things that younger people have to pay, that they have been actually screwed by the older generation. Or am I exaggerating?
No, I think that's a fair summary, Matt. I think if you look, for example, at the deposits, there's €162 billion in bank deposits.
That's not been held by young people.
It's not been held by young people. And in the last while, I saw one piece of research on it showing that it was mainly older people. Now, there isn't much research on that, but I think it's a safe assumption that they are older people. The boomers, if you like, as what they're known, as opposed to the Gen Zs, are doing very well. They've, for the large part, may own their house. They did buy during periods with very high inflation, high interest rates, high taxation. Got to say all that. But they're through the worst of it. They may have paid off the mortgage. They have gathered some savings. They had the decent pensions, which are now largely gone. I'm not sure. A lot of people don't have a pension. A million people don't have a pension outside the social welfare one, the PRSI one anyway.
State pension, essentially.
Yeah, but they had the old defined benefit, decent pensions for a lot of them. They got a lump sum out of that. So, you know, it's a generalization. Of course it is. This is not going to apply to everybody, but they are doing pretty okay. The younger ones are not. You know, if I to twist the W.B. Yeats poem, Sailing to Byzantium, it's no country for young people, this country. It's a tough country for young people. They're paying sky-high rents. They're on jobs uncertainty. There's something like 500,000 young adults living at home. 500,000. They're living at home because they have to. If you want to get it together to buy a home, you're talking about probably a deposit of €30,000. How long does it take to do that? If you're paying €2,000 in rent, The rents are absolutely astronomical.
Which is why so many younger people are staying at home. And I think, Charlie, both of us are in a situation where we have adult children, so we're probably alive to this. We're seeing them living at home with us, and we know what they're earning, and we know what their outgoings are, and we're probably providing support by allowing them to live at home so they don't actually have to go and rent. But you can also understand why they want to go and leave the house.
They want the freedom. They want the independence. They don't want to be, you know, being told to, what's happening when you come in, you know.
They want to be able to use the kitchen without being given out to by their mother for leaving the kitchen in a mess afterwards.
Or their father. And did nobody empty the dishwasher?
I'm using a specific example there, but anyway.
Yes, of course they do. They want to live, they want their own, they, you know, want to be, I have a 24-year-old, 21-year-old, and their chances are slim of finding their own property. This is why there was a very interesting recent survey commissioned by PTSB showing that very large numbers, particularly young people, particularly those in their kind of early 20s, 61% of them, are considering social housing as opposed to trying to get it together to buy a house because it costs so much, because it's so difficult to get a mortgage, there's so few houses out there, and a deposit is huge. And when you're trying to get a deposit together, paying $2,000 in rent, which is the average rent now, up 50% in 5 years, that's a hell of a mountain to climb.
This is a personal question to ask you. You may not want to answer it. But what age were you when you bought your first home?
Late 20s. Late 20s.
Yeah. I was lucky enough, 26, when I actually bought my first house, and was able to save the money for the deposit in 5 years of work. No support from my parents. I did it on my own. But the idea of anyone being able to do that now at the age of 26, and it was 14% interest rates when I actually signed the contract. They were down to 7% at the time when I actually exercised and moved into a new house. It was still the most important financial decision because it gave me the leverage to do things as I went along the way. But that is now denied to younger people. And there's loads of things that I want to get to and costs for younger people, which they may have that we don't have, Charlie. But Sarah McGuinness, you're listening there. I know it's very rude to ask a woman her age, but you're mid-20s, aren't you? Have you even reached mid-20s yet?
I'm 24.
24, exactly. So you're working in a good job, reasonably well paid.
Yeah.
By the standards of your age and the rest of it. But what are the chances, you reckon, how old do you reckon you might be before you're able to buy something for yourself to live in?
It completely depends because so much, like in an ideal world, I would probably, if you're, my kind of mentality around it is if you're moving out or if you're buying a house, you kind of have to consign yourself to the fact that you're probably going to have to do a shift of maybe 2 or 3 years, probably more, living at home if you have the luxury of living at home in a place where you can commute to
work. If your parents will let you back in.
If my parents will let me back in.
Sure, it's a good point. If you're actually, this is grand for maybe people who get a job near to where they've grown up, but there are lots of people who move within Ireland
completely.
And who can't have that option of staying with their parents.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So like that, like in many situations, but even like there are people who would commute from, I don't know, wherever, like Westmeath or whatever, and they just kind of put up with that. But if so, you're for someone from Donegal or Kerry and you're working in Dublin, it's just not feasible. So you kind of have to consign yourself to the fact that you're going to have a couple of pretty crappy years. Now, I think every generation has that. I talked to my parents about when they bought their first home. They were saying that they saved up for 2 years, both lived at home, barely went out or whatever. But I suppose there wasn't a feeling that every odd was going against them to get that home.
That there would be houses available to buy. That if you actually saved and if you made the effort, that there would be something you'd be able to afford to buy. Whereas look at it now, and with such a shortage of houses and with the prices going up so sharply, so fast, it looks like unless many people get some sort of gift from parents or from someone else, they're not going to be able to get the deposit together.
And also, Ireland is a completely different country now than it was then. My colleague Brian Mahon had a piece in the paper on Monday morning. There's a Chinese property investing firm that is basically highlighted the Irish housing crisis as an opportunity for investors to come over here and buy. That's the kind of environment that we're operating now that wouldn't have been the case maybe 30 years ago. And also, I have to say as well, I didn't realise until the last year or two how difficult it is as a single person to get a mortgage. That is one cohort that are just being completely overlooked by the government. So like if
There's an assumption that everyone is part of a family, isn't it? That everyone is coupled up.
There is, yeah, there is that assumption. And even if you are a single person, you kind of have to accept the fact that you're probably going to have to rent out a room in your house anyway to just be able to cover the mortgage. There is kind of no value seen, but obviously there are people who are way worse off. But single people who just want their own house, who want their own space, it's nearly impossible for them. And can I just say quickly, the Journal had this fabulous article a while ago, basically detailing the experiences of different people who wanted to move out, who were emigrating, which is obviously an entirely different subject. But there was one voice in it, and they were a 42-year-old person. They went sale agreed on a house. They were there for 9 months to a year, only for it to fall through. It's just so grim.
It is. And Charlie, I know that there will be people listening to this who will say, well, we actually had to rent out a room in the house and we did it for a couple of years. Or we shared for a number of years while we were saving. And I understand that and I get that. But the issue is that there at least was the potential to get out of that situation. Whereas now for people, they look at it and they don't see the potential for them to be able to buy something for themselves.
I think what's different this time, Matt, is affordability is so much more of an issue. It's about 8 times the average income now to purchase a house. 8 times. Now, you're only allowed to borrow 4 times.
4.5, isn't it?
Well, you can get 4, 4.5. You can get exemptions too, but okay. It's 4 times. Yeah. And you need a 10% deposit. It's 20% if you're a mover. It's very, very difficult to get to that, you know, and that's the difficulty. Because there's so few houses out there and the prices are being bid up all the time. There are new figures due out tomorrow from the Central Statistics Office. I bet my bottom dollar they'll show that prices are up again for about the 19th month in a row. They're going up at a ferocious rate, and we're just not building enough houses. There aren't enough properties to rent either. So look at, if you're, as Sarah was saying about a single person, if you're a single person and your parents can't give you a big gift, you know, to help you get a deposit, which is the lucky ones, this is how they're managing to do it. They're either in a very, very good job they can get a big gift of 20,000, 30,000 euros in early inheritance from their parents. And then they can, you know, go out there and try and bid for a property if they can find one. Otherwise, if you're on a low income, you're a single person, you don't have parents who can bung you 20, 30 grand.
And in some cases, a lot more. A lot more has been offered. Okay, we need to take a break. I want to come back and talk, though, about how young people also get hit with other major bills. Things like going to friends' weddings. Motor insurance has been more expensive. Been expected to put money into pensions, planning for 50 years down the line rather than what they need to do now. Even the cost of going to gigs, childcare if they have children, all of those things we're going to get to when we come back with Charlie Weston and Sarah McGuinness after we've had the traffic. Welcome back to our extended personal finance special today. We asked Charlie Weston to bring in Sarah McGuinness from the Irish Daily Mail as well with us. And motor insurance, Charlie, is another thing, isn't it, that is loaded against young people, despite the fact as well that there's considerable evidence that when you get much older, and there are still, again, I don't want to appear ageist, but I want to be fair, that older people can actually be involved in more accidents than younger people, and yet they will end up having cheaper motor insurance.
Well, there's interesting figures out from the Injuries Resolution Board showing that an awful lot of older people, particularly pedestrians, they're the ones making an awful lot of claims. They're vulnerable. They're very vulnerable. But you're absolutely right. It is a problem for young people getting motor insurance, and it has been forever, really, now, to be fair. But it's a particular problem. It's extremely expensive at the moment. Just passing your test, for example, because a lot of drivers are driving on provisional licenses, can reduce it by 400 euros. But we have very expensive insurance in this country in general. Anyway, our motor insurance is nearly double the average in this country compared with the European Union. It's about 616, the typical premium.
And that's the average. Look at the weighting,
Matt,
depending on the age.
3 times that 616.
Do you drive, Sarah?
No, I don't. I have my learners, but I actually went on to chill.ie, one of those brokers, and I worked it out I just put in all my details. If I were to get car insurance tomorrow morning, the cheapest option would be from Kenco, and it would be €2,368 per year. The highest from Allianz would be €3,844 per year.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And then you also are taking on the expense of buying your first car.
Of course, yeah, which is obviously that's a big investment in itself as well. But like, it's nearly this kind of, just from speaking to people in my age cohort, it's nearly kind of the car or rent. Because people who are living...
Those problems are kind of feeding each other, though. Yeah. Because you can't afford to live in a city, maybe where your job is. You probably need a car to get to...
Commute in and out.
And both are costing you a fortune.
Absolutely, yeah. It's nearly at the stage where it's kind of like, oh, sure, the car is costing me a bomb, but it's cheaper than paying rent, so I'll drive the hour anyway, you know.
When you're your age, do you think about things like pensions or personal health insurance?
Personal health insurance, yes, but that's because I could kind of tack on to my family plan and it worked out cheaper for me that way. Like, so I just send the money to my dad, and I actually do send the money to my dad, and I'm just part of the family plan. But, you know, if I didn't have, like, if my family didn't have that plan, would I be looking at it? I don't know. But in terms of pensions, I have not given my pension a second thought. And I would like to think that I'd be pretty, like, kind of clued in to, in terms of, you know, like managing finances or whatever. But like, I have a good job. I know that this is like going to be like, this is a good time for me to start. But like, it's just not even a thought for people my generation. And I think that people my age kind of have this awareness that we're probably going to be working until we're in our 70s. So,
or you might have to, because you might still be renting, and to continue paying the rent, you'll have to be continuing to earn rather than depending on the state pension. Charlie, of course, we'll have auto-enrolment for pensions probably next year. I mean, it's been put off to next year. I wonder, will it ever really happen? But is it fair to expect younger people to be putting money into a pension when they have other needs that they have to deal with earlier?
Well, that's a very hard sell. And you can see it would be, why it would be for young people when they have so many other financial commitments. I mean, you know, they're not in a probably, they're in a contract type job. They could be in the gig economy, which an awful lot of younger people are. They're starting off in their career. They don't have spare funds. So to try and sell a pension as an idea to young people, you can see why it's just, it's a difficult one. It's a hard sell.
And then what about private health insurance?
Auto enrollment has been promised and promised and promised, where, you know, the state would help you do it. Your employer would help you do it. It's going to start off with a low levels of contributions. But as you say, Matt, it's constantly being delayed, being talked about for 20 years.
What about private health insurance?
Should
young people actually think it's not worth it to me? The chances of me getting ill are low, unless it's applied to them in their job. And some people are lucky enough, they do get it as cover as part of their employment package, but not everybody gets that. Should they? Because there's another thing, isn't there, that if they don't start by a certain age, then they get loaded. This is new rules. As when they start, I think in their mid-30s, whatever, they'll get an extra 2% per annum they'll have to pay.
That's right. There's loadings from age 34, which has got a perverse incentive, if you like, to wait till you're 34 before you get health insurance, because it's an extremely expensive thing. And if you're young and fit and you're not finding yourself having to go for checkups and have issues, you're probably going to, and it's another thing you'll say, I'll risk it, you know, because I can't afford it. So this is why the government brought in this scheme to try and incentivize people from their 30s on, younger people, to get into health insurance to help subsidize the older ones who are drawn out health insurance all the time.
So the young are subsidizing the old.
Essentially, and the state has ratified that with the lifetime community rating. Yeah.
Sarah, a couple of other things. You're still young at 24, so you haven't hit the stage yet where all of your friends are getting married.
No.
Now, that used to be a thing probably in Charlie and myself's generation, late 20s into early 30s. It's getting later and later now. But then the cost of it is, we had a colleague who worked on the show, and I think she at one stage had 17 weddings in a year that she had to go to. She had no holidays for the year because she had to take all her days off to attend the weddings and the day after. And then there was the cost of going and staying in places and the cost of a present for the couple getting married. The year nearly killed her.
Yeah, well, yeah, that sounds financially crippling. 17 weddings is huge.
I know a lot of young people now just turn down invites to weddings because they simply can't afford to go.
Yeah, or like a lot of people, like there's kind of grown trend that I'm witnessing anyway, just like siblings of my friends or whatever, who might just go to their local city hall and then have a big party, like somewhere
keep the cost down.
Yeah, where it's accessible for everyone to get to. It's not this case of you feel obliged to give that 300 quid envelope because, you know, they've spent so much on covering it. But it's astronomical. But I suppose it's just a reflection on how expensive things like hotels and hospitality businesses have become.
And then another thing I've noticed, that if you go to gigs, I mean, most of the gigs that come in seem to be aimed at middle-aged and older people because of the price of the tickets. How often would you go to gigs?
I'd say maybe once a month. But yeah, like it's kind of like I wouldn't be going to like a lot of the big ones, say. Like it would kind of just be like friends of friends, like people we'd kind of know from around. But yeah, like I'd probably go to like one big concert in like Malahide Castle or something per year. And that's kind of it. Like it, I don't think it's the same as it used to be in terms of...
Well, the gigs, I suppose, Charlie, is only a thing in recent decades. There wouldn't have been that many big ones on when we were young fellas.
Well, Slane was on when I was a young fella. That was a big one. But I remember guys leaving exams early in UCD to get up to Slane. But you know, the Coldplays and Lana Del Rey is coming to the Aviva at the end of June.
Also, you have Dua Lipa.
Dua Lipa. I mean,
for a younger audience.
Those ones are expensive. And if you're coming up from outside of Dublin and you want to stay in a hotel, they always whack up the hotel rates, the overnight rates. So it does cost a small fortune to go to those big ones. But it's different if you're going to a more intimate gig in a pub or whatever.
But it's also just the price of everything. And I know these prices apply to everyone, but young people tend to go out more than older people. And the price of a taxi now on the way home of an evening.
Yeah, my like housemate, she grew up in Rathoath. It'd be 40 quid for a taxi out to Rathoath for her, but I lived in Artane before I moved out. It'd be 25 quid for me to get home to Artane. Like, it's absolutely crazy.
But you have to do that for safety reasons.
You do have to do that for safety reasons. Like, there are kind of more 24-hour buses coming on stream, but like, as someone who would take them quite frequently to save myself the taxi fare, they're not always pleasant. Like, they're not a pleasant environment. And yeah, like, you do, it's kind of like, I'll get a taxi home, I'll treat myself. And you really are treating yourself because it adds up.
Okay, we're running out of time here. There are older listeners who are saying, look, we've had it tough as well. The young people don't have it as tough as they think. But I think, Charlie, they do. And I think we actually have to make more of a consideration about a need to rebalance certain things in society.
I think, you know, I mean, I suppose the difference now is we all had it tough in this country, and those people when they were growing up, we had recessions, like going back to the 70s, the oil, that impacted everybody. Everybody who drove a car had to queue for petrol, you know, back in the day. We had a banking collapse that impacted everybody. You know, we had Brexit, that's still falling out. They all affected everybody. The difference this time is, certain cohorts are doing fine. You know, they're doing absolutely fine. As Austin Hughes was saying in your programs, the comfortable, the coping. It's the ones who are not, the younger people in particular, the poorer people. They're the ones who are struggling, and it's galling for them to see others doing extremely well while they're not.
But very briefly, and Sarah McGuinness, I'm asking you this as a political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail. If housing was sorted out, that would sort a lot of this out, wouldn't it?
Oh, completely. Yeah, it would. Like, I mean, like, if the average salary for a 25-year-old, according to the CSO, is just shy of 300,000, it's just shy of, 30,000.
Absolutely. Euro. Big difference there, Sarah.
Yeah, but like, if that, so that amounts to about maybe 560 euro per month.
Yeah.
You can't, rent for an apartment in Dublin's 2,000 euro, you can't afford that. It's really a knock.
560
on
a week.
560, yeah, yes. Yeah. It's just a knock, like the implications are just knocking on. And also, I think it kind of also feeds into this air of uncertainty for young people that maybe are like our previous generations didn't have.
Sarah McGuinness from the Irish Daily Mail and Charlie Weston, personal finance editor of the Irish Independent. Thank you for doing this extended personal finance special today.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Let's face it, football is a game of risks. Whether it's calling a trick play on your own five or bringing kale chips to a watch party. And while taking crazy chances like this occasionally may pay off, taking big, unnecessary risks can mean real trouble, especially when you're gambling. So always know the odds and what you're getting into. Want more tips on how to keep gambling fun? Go to keepitfunohio.com, where you'll find interesting quizzes, fun games, and lots of effective ways to keep your gambling in check.